So in this way, there is a possibility of learning from everywhere. It depends how open we are to receive spiritual knowledge. But it shouldn't be artificially done. It should be genuine. It should be real. And then we learned, in order to make spiritual advancement, we should detach ourselves from the material nature as much as possible. We should project our consciousness internally. Senses are going outwards. As Krishna mentioned in Bhagavad Gita, Dhyate Vishayan Pungsha. The senses are running towards the objects of the senses. And that becomes the cause of our entanglement, cause of our bondage. So important thing is to withdraw our senses. And project it internally. That is the meaning of spiritual life. Internalize. And internalize means what? Internalize can mean two things. One is think of nothing. The yogis generally mistake that, because Patanjali's Yoga Sutra, the first sutra is Atha Chitta Vritti Nirodha. Stop the activities of the mind. And it is mistaken that to stop the activities of the mind means let not think of anything. But it's not possible. Mind's business is to think. How can you not think? As Krishna mentioned in Bhagavad Gita, that sarvendriyani sanjamya ya aste manasa smaran. He stopped the activities of the senses, but in a mind he is thinking of various things, manasa smaran. Without thinking, mind cannot stay even for a moment. So that is a positive, that's a negative approach. The positive approach is that think of Krishna. And that's what Krishna is saying, man mana bhavo. You cannot stop the activity of the mind. Mind must think. But don't think of the objects of the senses, but think about Krishna. That is the positive way. You cannot empty your mind. These are all misconceptions. Misunderstanding of the main objective. Stop thinking about nonsense. But that doesn't mean stop thinking altogether. Stop thinking about nonsense. Stop thinking about objects of the senses. Thinking about how to gratify the senses, how to enjoy with the senses. But think of Krishna. Think of Krishna's pastimes. So that is the positive way of thinking. Ja aste manasa smara. Anyway, so activities of the senses must stop. Mind, which is the source of the senses or internal sense, should be projected internally to meditate upon Krishna. Real meditation means meditating on Krishna. Anyone who wants to make spiritual advancement must free himself from this external involvement. But then, as I pointed out, it's not possible to not be involved materially, but involve to offer everything to Krishna. Mind will think, body will act. Activity of the mind is to think, and activity of the body is to act. The propensity of the body is to act. So act for Krishna. These are the three things: kaya, mana, and vakya. So body must act. Therefore act for Krishna. Mind must think. So think about Krishna. The tongue must speak. Therefore speak about Krishna or chant his holy name. Another activity of the tongue is eat. Eat Krishna prasad. So these are the positive way of progressing towards our spiritual direction. And then this morning we discussed about the living entities are naturally prone or susceptible to become entangled in the material nature. When a living entity turns away from Krishna, he falls in Krishna's external energy. He becomes entrapped by Krishna's external energy. And it's very difficult. Daivi Heshav Gunamoi Mama Maya Durattaya. It's very, very difficult to disentangle ourselves from the bondage of Maya. The only way is accepting a guide, spiritual guide, accepting a devotee to guide us in our spiritual life. And that is a bona fide spiritual master. So that is how step by step we are getting some very important understanding. So the next chapter is describing about beyond renunciation. We learned about renunciation, renounce the entanglement in this material nature. But what is beyond that? Beyond renunciation and knowledge. Which actually means, renunciation means going out of this material nature. Renunciation and knowledge means liberation. Liberation. We are liberated from the material bondage. But then what? Beyond renunciation and knowledge, meaning beyond liberation. What is beyond liberation? That's what we'll get to know. In simple words, beyond liberation is engagement in Krishna service, Krishna consciousness. That is what is beyond liberation. It can be understood in this way. One is in the prison. He is being punished in the prison. Then he understands why he is imprisoned, and acting on that understanding, he becomes free from the prison. Liberation, free from the material bondage. The way to become free is by surrendering to the king, accepting our mistake, admitting our mistake, recognizing our mistake, and surrender to the king. So the king says, okay, now you are rectified, so you go out of the prison. So going out of the prison means liberation. When we are out of this material nature, we are liberated. We are no more bound in the prison house of material nature. But then the consideration is, when you get out of the prison, go to the free world, then what? Do we have to do something there? So that activity, beyond freedom, beyond liberation, is devotional service. So devotional service, bhakti, is beyond mukti. Bhukti, enjoyment in this material nature, then becoming free from the material bondage, mukti, and then comes bhakti. This is the real progression. So in this way we understand the bhakti is the ultimate accomplishment. Enjoyment in the material nature, bhukti, liberation from the material bondage, mukti, and then engagement in Krishna's service is bhakti. So this is the essential teachings of the scriptures. So that is what Krishna also instructing to Uddhava. So in this chapter, the glories of the holy association of saintly personalities and super excellence of pure love of the residents of Vrindavan are described. Gradually, Krishna is bringing devotion and the highest form of devotion. What is the highest form of devotion? The devotion of the residents of Vrindavan. Mainly devotion of the gopis. Ramma kachidupashana brajabadhu bargena jakulpita. The way the cowherd damsels serve Krishna, that is the highest form of worship, highest form of devotion. So the association of saintly devotees destroys the soul's attachment to material life, materialistic life. And that association of saintly devotees is so powerful that it even attracts the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In Nectar of Devotion, Rupa Goswami has described that. His bhakti, Lata, has different stages of development. First, as it sprouts, then it destroys suffering condition and brings auspiciousness. And the final consideration is Krishna Karshani Cha. Bhakti actually attracts even Krishna. So this is how powerful bhakti is. It attracts Krishna. Krishna otherwise is inconquerable, unconquerable. But Krishna becomes conquered. Prayasha, Ajita, Api, Jaitristrailakam. So although Krishna is Ajita, inconquerable, he becomes conquered by his devotees. Nobody could conquer Krishna. Very powerful personalities like Hiranyakashipu, Hiranyaksha, Ravan, Kumbhakarna, Shishupal, etc. They were extremely powerful, but they could not defeat Krishna. But that Krishna becomes defeated by his devotee's devotion. Krishna actually becomes controlled by his devotees. But of course, we should not try to imitate that. It will happen at a very, very advanced stage. We will see. But our business is simply to serve Krishna as his menial servant. Then Krishna is telling Uddhav that no process like Sankhya, Yoga, religious activities, study of scriptures, austerities, renunciation, charity, vows of fasting, worship of the deity, secret mantras, visiting holy places, and any such activity cannot have the same result as devotion. That means any of these activities cannot give devotion and cannot derive the benefit that one gets out of devotion. By austerity, penance and all these things that have been mentioned here, yoga, etc. Krishna cannot be controlled, nor can one receive Krishna's mercy. Krishna is not going to be pleased. Again, we can go back to the same story. That anecdote is very important. A yogi who is performing austerity in such a way that a anthill has grown around his body. Such severe austerity. But when he asked Narad Muni, and Narad Muni asked Krishna when he will remember him, Krishna said he'll have to come back another lifetime. So that means even this such austerity so hard that he developed an anthill around his body, that means he was not moving. If he was moving, then the ants couldn't develop the anthill around his body. It means that he was not moving, meaning he is not eating, he is not sleeping, just sitting there. Yes, the yogis can do that. There are so many such instances. One instance is Hiranyakashipu. He was performing austerity so hard that an anthill grew around his body. So this yogi is performing austerities in such a severe way. But was Krishna impressed? No. Krishna is not impressed with his austerity. He'll have to come back again, meaning when he gives up this yoga practice and surrenders unto Krishna, becomes a devotee, then only he'll become it, be able to come back to Krishna. On the other hand, a cobbler, he has such implicit faith in Krishna, and he is so patient that someday Krishna will remember me. Such a humble position. That means, how can one think that way? Someday Krishna will think of me, and he is dancing in ecstasy. That is a devotee. So that's the difference between a yogi and a devotee. A devotee has simple faith in Krishna. A devotee has simple love for Krishna. A devotee has total surrender to Krishna. Whereas the yogis are unable to do that. Therefore, they can't receive Krishna's mercy. And to become a devotee, it's possible to become a devotee only by the association of a saintly personality. Only due to the association of devotees, self-realized, pure devotees, can we receive the mercy of Krishna. And then Krishna is going to the damsels of Vrindavan. They're simple girls, village girls, also cowherd girls. No education. None of them went to school. None of them had any such philosophical understanding. These girls, they're ignorant of even Krishna's identity. They don't even know who Krishna is. They're dealing with Krishna, but they do not know who this Krishna is. Their only feeling is, I love this person. That's the only feeling that they have towards him. I love him. We can't help but love him. We don't know who he is. Some people say that he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Even if he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, what difference does it make? Sometimes they may even ask him, oh, what does it mean, Supreme Personality of Godhead? Supreme Personality sounds a big name. What does it actually mean? Not only that, naturally they had understanding of Narayan as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But when they're seeing Narayan, Krishna assumed the form of Narayan and standing on the way. They're seeing Narayan. They're offering obeisances. Please bless us that we can find Krishna. They're not even attracted or interested in Narayan. So that is the unique love of the gopis for Krishna. And by the power of constant association of Krishna, they attain to the supreme power of supreme absolute truth, which even great demigods like Brahma cannot achieve. What the gopis achieved, even Brahma cannot achieve that. Lord Shiva cannot achieve that. So that is the exalted position of the gopis. All they have is simple love for Krishna. That is what devotion is. What does it indicate? To become a devotee, we do not have to become a big scholar, big yogi, big philosopher, big thinker. We simply have to love Krishna. That's about all. Of course, behind that love, as we are practicing Krishna consciousness, there must be some knowledge. Otherwise, how can we love him? Gopis are fortunate that they are in constant association of Krishna. But we have to aspire for the association of Krishna. Therefore, we have to love Krishna. In order to love Krishna, we have to know who Krishna is. And their love for Krishna is so intense that their mind is constantly thinking of Krishna. They don't have any other thought. And that is the meaning of Krishna consciousness. The mind is will be thinking only about Krishna. That is the meaning of Krishna consciousness. So their love for Krishna is so intense that when Krishna left, when Akrura came and took Krishna away, to them a moment was appearing to be like ages, yugas, nimeshena yugaitam. A nimesh, the blink of an eye, wink of an eye, just that much time appears to be like yugas. And when they're in association of Krishna, one night appears to be like a moment. So these are some indication of the gopis' love for Krishna. And nothing else could actually satisfy them in this world. All they wanted is Krishna and nothing else. And finally, Krishna actually advised Uddhav. Uddhav, give up all these other activities, other endeavors. Endeavor for religiosity, endeavor for even following the scriptures, scriptural injunctions. Give up all that. Because Uddhav actually was very scholarly, very learned. And he had a little pride. Of course, that pride Krishna broke. Uddhav had some pride that he was so learned. Actually, in Dwarka, he was considered to be the greatest devotee. So in order to teach Uddhav some lesson, Krishna told him, Uddhav, carry this message to the gopis. They are actually suffering from my separation. So Uddhav actually went very proud, carrying message of Krishna. Now I will tell them what's the real goal of life. Why are you lamenting for Krishna? Krishna is in your heart. See Krishna in your heart. He is not away from you. Don't think that he has gone away. He is with you. And what did Uddhav learn? Uddhav, all your knowledge and thoughts, take them with you. This knowledge of yours are not going to satisfy us. Because you do not know what love is. Uddhav learned a lesson. The most exalted devotee of Dwarka is being told, Uddhav, you do not know what devotion is. You do not know what love is. Because you never fell in love with Krishna. Therefore, you cannot understand how we feel. And then Uddhav saw the way the gopis were behaving, especially the way Radharani was behaving due to separation of Krishna, which is displayed in Bhramar Gita. The way they were behaving in separation from Krishna. Uddhav actually saw. When he went to the houses, they saw that there was cobweb in their chula, in their fireplace, oven. That means they didn't cook. They didn't cook for so long that the spiders have made webs in there. So due to separation from Krishna, they didn't eat. They didn't sleep. And by seeing that, Uddhav recognized, and in light of their love for Krishna, Uddhav realized his insignificant position. Therefore, Uddhav desired, Asha Maho Charano Reno, Jusha Maham Shama, Brindavane Kimapi Gulma Taro Shadhinam. He desired to become a blade of grass or a bush or a simple weed in Vrindavan. Why? Because Uddhav desired the dust from the lotus feet of the gopis. To be in a situation when he could get the dust from the lotus feet of the gopis. So this is again, this is how a real advanced devotee behaves. When he sees the degree of devotion in other devotees, he automatically becomes humble and recognizes his insignificant position and becomes humble. He came thinking, oh, I am going to tell the gopis, why are you? I'll give them jnana. I'll give them knowledge. I'll give them understanding who Krishna actually is. But ultimately what happened? His attitude completely changed. And he simply, Uddhav, the greatest devotee of Dwarka, is wanting to become a blade of grass in Vrindavan. So that is the situation of Vrindavan, and that is the attitude of a real advanced devotee. So that is why Krishna is telling Uddhav. All these activities are not important. Give up all consideration of religion and irreligion as promulgated in the Shrutis and Smritis in the Vedic scriptures. And instead of that, just take shelter of the example of the women of Vrindavan. That is the highest form of devotion. So the next chapter is describing how Krishna appeared as a swan, Hamsa avatar, and he instructed Brahma. Brahma's four sons, Sanat Kumar, Sanatan, Sanandan and Sanat Kumar, asked Brahma some questions. But Brahma didn't have the answer. So he took shelter of Krishna. So Krishna came. And as a swan. And as a swan, he instructed Lord Brahma. Described how he revealed or relieved Brahma of his ignorance. And the first thing he actually instructed him that the three modes of material nature, goodness, passion, ignorance, they are pertaining to the body, material body. They are not to the soul. Because anything that is material is related to the material body. Soul is not affected by all that. Soul is not affected by the different modes of nature. When one acts in different modes, it is body that is being affected, not the soul. Soul is beyond the three modes of material nature. And one should, but still, in order to become qualified, one must act in such a way that the body can become free from the influence of the modes. And the lower modes of ignorance and passion can be conquered by the mode of goodness. So modes, the different modes actually function in a specific way. It is passion and ignorance, they rotate in cycle. For example, in the mode of passion, one acts during the day, and then at night, in the mode of ignorance, he falls asleep. Then in the morning, he wakes up from the mode of ignorance and starts to act again in the mode of passion. So activities in the material nature, on the material platform, is conducted by the mode of passion. And ignorance takes to inactivity, loss of consciousness. So that is how it's cycling. In mode of passion, they're working. Mode of ignorance, they're falling asleep. Again, they're waking up in the mode of passion. They're acting, again falling asleep in the mode of ignorance. So passion and ignorance are cycling like that, continuously. But mode of goodness is, to be in the mode of goodness is to be out of the mode of passion and ignorance and see things as they are. That is the advantage of being in the mode of goodness. Goodness means to see things as they are and acting in that understanding. Tada rajastamo bhava kamo lobha dayaschaje cheto eto ir anabiddhang sthitang satte prasidati. Acting in, due to the mode of ignorance and passion, one indulges in lust, greed, anger, etc. Kamo lobho dayaschaje. But cheto etoir anabiddhang, when the consciousness becomes unaffected by the mode and becomes situated in the mode of goodness. So that means everybody is rotating in the cycle, and one has to come out of the cycle to be in the mode of goodness. Come out of the cycle of passion and ignorance. And sthitang satya prasidati. Then only evang prasanna manaso bhagavat bhakti yogataha. In the mode of goodness only one can actually become involved in the mode of, in the devotional service. Bhagavad Bhakti Yogata. So as long as we are in the mode of passion and ignorance, we won't be able to become situated in the mode of, in the mode in devotional service. To become situated properly in devotional service, we have to transcend the mode and come into the mode of goodness. But then what happens? Then, yes, mode of passion is applied in devotional service. And that passion actually takes us to the pure goodness, transcending even the mode of goodness. So that is how one actually transcends the modes of, or bondage of this material nature due to different modes and comes to the spiritual platform. So in this way, the mode of goodness is like the conduit that takes us from the material to the spiritual. But then again, it needs proper guidance. Otherwise, mode of goodness can lead to just desire for liberation, desire for jnana and renunciation. That is also act of mode of goodness. But that's a dangerous situation. Tar moddhe mokkho bancha koitobo pradhan. jaha huite krishna bhakti hoy antardhan. Of all these desire, bhakti, mukti, siddhi, desire for enjoyment in the material nature, aspiration for liberation from material bondage, or aspiration for yoga siddhi, they all are full of desire. All these are leading to desire. Therefore, those who are practicing them, they are always disturbed mentally. Bhukti mukti siddhi kami shakoli ashanto. Ashanto. Disturbed. But Krishna bhakta nishkam, a devotee is free from all desire. Therefore, atoev shanto, therefore he is peaceful internally. Because he doesn't have any desire. He is depending upon Krishna. Whatever Krishna will give, fine with me. Krishna makes me suffer, fine. Krishna makes me enjoy, fine. But I am not either interested in suffering or in enjoyment. I am not averse to suffering, nor I am attached to enjoyment. That is the position of a devotee. And then it is saying that all these activities are detrimental to our spiritual progress. Desire for liberation, desire for enjoyment, desire for yoga siddhi, or even dharma, artha, kam, moksha, liberation, leading to liberation. They are not worth its while. But of all these, moksha vancha, desire for liberation, is the most deceiving. Because this desire for due to the desire for liberation, Krishna bhakti hoy antardhan. Krishna bhakti disappears. When we want to become liberated, in a way, this aspiration for liberation actually is synonymous to trying to become like Krishna. So that is due to envy. So that has to be given up. Desire for liberation. Liberation will come automatically. Mukti or liberation is simply a byproduct of devotion. Example, a prisoner realizes what is the cause of his suffering or imprisonment. He appeals to the king. Then the king says, okay, he seems that he is being rectified. So king instructs the prison authorities that this person has surrendered, so treat him specially. So then does the prison authority treat him like a prisoner or treats him like a... although he is in the prison, but he is not a prisoner anymore. He is getting all kinds of facilities. Although he is in the prison, just like those who are serving the king in the prison. Although they are in the prison, are they prisoners? In the prison, the king has many employees serving in the prison. Like the jailer, guards, wardens, cooks. Although they are in the prison, are they prisoners or they are free? So similarly, when one surrenders unto Krishna and becomes engaged in serving him, is he still a prisoner or he is free? So this is how, just by accepting devotion or by surrendering to Krishna, one automatically becomes free or liberated. He is not a prisoner anymore. Therefore, it is said that the mukti, when does one achieve liberation? Okay, chanting Hare Krishna. First stage is offensive stage, committing offenses. Then the next stage is clearing stage. Clearing stage. And one becomes liberated in the clearing stage only. He's not chanting purely, not pure chanting as yet. His chanting is just becoming free from offenses, but he is liberated. Just like Haridas Thakur mentioned in the house of Raghunath Das Goswami's parents. Koti janme brahmo gyane jei mukti noy shudhumatra nama bhashe shei mukti hoy. The liberation that one cannot achieve out of millions of lifetimes of Brahman realization, just in the clearing stage of chanting, nam abhash, one achieves that liberation. It's a heavy statement. Like the liberation that one cannot achieve in millions of Brahman realization, one achieves that just in nama chant period of nama, in chanting in nama bhash, clearing stage of chanting. So there was a Brahmin there, Gopal Chakravarti, very proud of his knowledge and being Brahmana. He must have been also feeling very envious. This Muslim guy is getting so much importance. He's a Muslim. Look, all these people are giving him so much respect. Even the king is giving him a seat and listening to him with such attention. So he just stands up and says, if that is true, then I'll cut off my nose. Haridas Thakur didn't get into any contest. But then what happened? He didn't have to cut off his nose. He developed leprosy and his nose started to fall off. He became affected by leprosy. And in leprosy, the body melts away. Flesh and bone even melts away. And not only, so this is Haridas Thakur's statement, and these are scriptural evidence as there. At the stage of Namabhash, one achieves liberation. And as we saw through this example, a prisoner surrendering to the king is automatically freed from his imprisonment, although he may be in the prison. But how does he act? He tells other prisoners, look, I did that and look, I got so much benefit. A simple thing I did is sent a note to the king. I'm sorry for all my mistakes. I promise I'll not make the same mistake again. I am surrendering myself unto you. Just a simple appeal to the king and see how I'm being treated. I'm not being treated as a prisoner anymore. I'm getting all these facilities. So that is how he goes out and preaches. And the prison authorities also treat him in a special way. That he is not treated like a prisoner. So that is a simple understanding. But then what does one get from through priya chanting? Clearing chant stage of chanting gives liberation. Now what to speak of? Pure chanting. Shuddha naam. The pure chanting gives Krishna prem. That is the benefit of pure chanting. So, so to get out of this material bondage, it is important that we become free from the passion and ignorance. And then only we'll become situated in the mode of goodness, which will enable us to conquer the effects of the passion and ignorance, and enable us to go towards the spiritual direction through devotional service. And those who are affected by the mode of passion, what happens? They become slaves of their senses. In one hand, Krishna is telling how to conquer the passion and ignorance, but then he's pointing out what is the outcome of being influenced by the mode of passion. He becomes a slave of his senses. He can't control his senses. And as a result of that, he becomes entangled in the material nature and suffers. On the other hand, a devotee who is situated in proper knowledge, he detaches himself from the mode of passion and ignorance. And he becomes situated at the lotus feet of the Lord through his surrender unto him. Actually, although Brahma, again we are going back to the same point, only by the mercy of the Lord or the mercy of the devotee of the Lord one can have this understanding. Brahma, look at Brahma's situation. He is the most powerful individual in this universe. He is the one who is giving everybody his body. We are getting our bodies, the facilities to act in this material nature by Brahma's mercy. But even Brahma didn't have that knowledge. But he was humble. He surrendered unto the Supreme Lord when his sons wanted to have the absolute knowledge. And the Lord appeared as Hamsa avatar and imparted the knowledge to him. So he took shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and he received this knowledge from the Lord. So now we are going to the next paragraph, next chapter. The Lord explains the yoga system to Uddhava. Krishna explains that devotional service to the Supreme Lord is the most excellent method of spiritual practice. Actually, Krishna is making that point time and time again. That devotion is the answer. Devotion to the Lord is the answer. Devotion to the Lord is the only way to become free from material bondage and become situated on the spiritual platform. And Uddhava here actually asked Krishna, which process is most effective? Which process is most effective? And Krishna again pointed out that this knowledge was actually lost. The knowledge that was revealed in the Vedas was lost during the time of annihilation. And at the beginning of new creation, therefore, he again spoke this knowledge, gave this knowledge to Brahma. And Brahma repeated this knowledge to Manu. Then Manu gave this knowledge to other sages headed by Bhrigu. Bhrigu is one of the 10 sons of Brahma. Pulastha, Pulaha, Kratu, Angira, Marichi, Vashishta, Bhrigu, Daksha, then Narad. So he gave this knowledge to, in this way, Brahma gave it to Manu, and in this way it flew through the sages. So again, we are coming into another junction here. There are two branches of knowledge coming down. One knowledge is coming through the sages and coming into the material direction, how to act in this material nature. And the another branch is coming through Narad, the knowledge of pure devotion to the Supreme Lord. So this is how there are two streams here. So and because the living entities, due to various desires, this system of religion has been established. This system of religion that has been revealed in the Vedas in the form of Karmakanda and Gyanakanda is to first give the living entity the chance to enjoy in the material nature, then become totally frustrated, and then aspire to get out of the material nature. And of course, time and time again, Krishna is pointing out that process is devotional service. And in the other ages, that was actually the process. And that is how we are actually so fortunate. Other ages, it was Karmakanda, Gyanakanda. Then the topmost aspect of Gyanakanda is yoga, Ashtanga Yoga. Then transcending that Ashtanga Yoga is coming to the platform of bhakti. In the perfection of the perfected stage of yoga in samadhi, one sees the Lord in the heart and naturally surrenders unto the Lord, which is called, surrender is called prapatti or sharanagati, sharanagati. And that sharanagati leads him to the platform of devotion. So Prabhupada pointed out, or classified or exemplified it in this way, that normal course of PhD is, you go to school, go to college, go to university, do your master's, and then you become qualified to do the PhD. But sometimes the PhD is directly offered to somebody. The university offers the PhD to some person. They didn't have to go through the school, college, etc. University just gives them. So what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave is like direct PhD. No school, no college, no university, no writing thesis and becoming qualified, direct award of PhD. So the point is, bhakti, otherwise one achieves bhakti through the process of going through the Karmakanda section of the Vedas, Gyanakanda section of the Vedas, and then he comes to the final conclusion, Uttar Mimamsa, Vedanta. And then this Vedanta is the foundation of bhakti. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came and gave this bhakti directly. So that is why Mahaprabhu is so Mahavadannaya. Namo Mahavadannaya, Krishna Prema Pradayate. Krishna Prema Pradayate. Rupa Goswami is saying, who is this person who is distributing Krishna Prem without any discrimination, without any consideration of eligibility and qualification? This Krishna Prem is rare for Lord Shiva, Lord Brahma. So who is this person? So who could be this person other than Krishna himself, who is able to give this bhakti in such a way? So he must be Krishna himself. Although he is hiding his identity, He's saying, I'm a devotee of Krishna. And if anybody said that he is Krishna, he would cover his ears and say, Vishnu, Vishnu. Even he would go jump into the river to take a bath with his clothes on. So that personality, who is he other than Krishna himself? Otherwise, who can give Krishna bhakti the way he is giving to everyone? So this is how we have to recognize our good fortune. What we got is so rare. It's very, very important that we recognize that. So, devotional service frees us from all material bondage and qualifies us to go back to the spiritual world. Then who is Krishna? Okay, at the end, Krishna is making a very nice point. I'll just make that point also. I kind of skipped that. Krishna is saying that compared to this devotional service, all these practices like yoga and perfection of yoga, samadhi, acquiring all these kind of siddhis and ultimately acquiring samadhi is simply a waste of time. Waste of time. Now let's go back to the yogi. No one knows for how many years he may have been performing this austerity, that he has got an anthill around his body. But according to Krishna's statement, total waste of time. And all these yoga siddhis, Krishna is pointing out, a devotee achieves that automatically. Another example in that respect. An ordinary person wants to become very rich. The goal of life is to become a billionaire. So what he has to do to become a billionaire? He has to work hard. Run a business, cheat so many people to get the billion, make so much endeavor, then he becomes a billionaire. Right? On the other hand, the son of a billionaire, what does he have to do? He simply has to grow up. The father won't give him the billion when he's a child. He may have given in his will that I am giving my billions to my son. But he will get it only when he grows up. See the difference? Now the devotees are like the billionaire's sons. One may say, well, what to speak of billion? I don't even have 100 rupees. The answer is, don't worry. Only a matter of time. In due course of time, you will inherit your father's wealth. I remember when I was young, I had a friend, and he was coming from a very, very rich family. Very wealthy family. And we used to get pocket money, something to eat, something to buy. But he didn't have any money. His family would not give him any money. But they would get everything that he needed, like during the tiffin time, there used to be a break. And that time, some of us could, with our money, we could buy something. But his thing is to come with his servant, driving in a car, coming with his tiffin. And like apparently his condition was even more miserable than ours. But it was just his parents didn't want to spoil him by giving unnecessary wealth at an immature stage. And so, like, if we don't have anything now, if we don't have any siddhi, so to say, don't worry about it. You don't have it because Krishna is waiting for you to become qualified. When you become qualified, all these siddhis and riddhis, etc., will come automatically. The devotees have it automatically. And in that respect, there is a very nice anecdote and pastime. He was a disciple of Shyamananda Prabhu, Rashikananda Prabhu. So one day, Rashikananda Prabhu, by sitting, you see in India, in the villages, they brush their teeth with neem twig. And they generally do it sitting on next to a pond, brush their teeth and wash their mouth. So Rashikananda Prabhu was brushing his teeth sitting on a piece of stone by a pond. So somebody came and said, "You know something? A yogi came riding on a tiger." So Rashikananda Prabhu said, "Oh, I see. So let me go and see him." So he went flying on that piece of stone. That stone, he went flying, sitting on that stone to see the yogi that came riding on a tiger. And incidentally, that yogi became his disciple. So this is how they recognize, you know, honest person recognizes the superior qualities. That reminds me of another incident. There was another yogi. He was in Punjab. He had the yoga siddhi that he could make anyone rise from the ground. Not only he himself rising, levitation is a yoga siddhi, but he would make others rise up. So Guru Gobind Singh heard about that. So Guru Gobind Singh went to see him. So Guru Gobind Singh made a challenge. "Okay, you make me rise." This person couldn't, the yogi couldn't do that. And this yogi actually surrendered to Guru Gobind Singh. And he actually became one of the most fierce warriors in Guru Gobind Singh's army. His name was Banda Bahadur. So, yeah, the yogis surrender to the devotees and they become engaged in devotional service. In that respect also, we have to recognize Guru Gobind Singh was a devotee. That's why he was fighting like that on behalf of Krishna to protect Dharma. But the mistake was, in Kali Yuga, Krishna doesn't want us to fight. So this is another point. Because he didn't have a proper guru, like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he got into fighting. And this fight caused so much distress, so much suffering, so much bloodshed. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also was at the same time contemporary. He said, "Don't fight, no need to fight." And Muslims became his devotees. A whole village became devotees. Pathan Vaishnavas in Uttar Pradesh. Therefore, better not to fight. Because this age is not meant. Devotional service is not going to be practiced in this age in fighting. Because it's impossible to establish. Because of that, violence will lead more violence and more violence, and there won't be any time for devotional service, chanting Hare Krishna. I'm saying it because while I was speaking about Banda Bahadur, one thought actually came to my mind. This Banda Bahadur eventually was captured by the Mughals. And they tied him upside down in a tree, legs up, head down. And they skinned him from leg downwards. Such a horrible end to meet. Anyway, one lesson to learn, avoid conflict. If there is a possibility of conflict, just chant Hare Krishna. And you can see how it works. I can give you one example. Last year, we had a big challenge. Brooklyn Temple in America was taken away from ISKCON by the so-called temple president. And he wanted to sell that temple for $64 million. And naturally, from GBC side, we had to fight. Fight in the sense, struggle to get it back. And eventually, I had to go to the temple. Last year, I was the chairman of the GBC. So when this responsibility came, who would do that? Who would deliver that letter of expulsion to that temple president? So I volunteered, okay, I will go. So one Sunday feast I went. The temple was packed. Many of them are his followers, this person's followers. So I went and had to, he didn't come to receive it, so I had to make the announcement that on behalf of GBC, we are actually expelling this person from being the temple president. And the situation, you can naturally became very chaotic. So what I did, I just started to chant Hare Krishna. I just started a kirtan. And then everybody got involved in the kirtan. And the temple president ran out of the temple room. So, this is the power. This is the power of the holy name. So, we can face any critical situation just by taking shelter of the holy name. Because what can anybody do at a time like that? He did that. He took the microphone away. But we are prepared. Somebody was there with a megaphone. So we knew that something like that would happen. So we started chanting. He switched off. His wife went and closed the altar. Shut the altar, you know. And they switched off the power. So it was all dark. Doesn't matter. We started to chant. But somebody knew where the main switch was. So he went and switched it on again. So this is how we have to deal with critical situations. And it will happen. Another example, Srila Prabhupada. There was a possibility that the Japanese are coming to bomb Fort William, which is a big center for the British in Calcutta. So if they bomb Fort William, many of the city would have been also bombed. Calcutta city would have been bombed. And so everyone was evacuating from the city, leaving the city, Calcutta. But what did Prabhupada do? Prabhupada just went with one or two boys, with a mridanga and kartal, and started chanting Hare Krishna. They were going that way, leaving Calcutta. Prabhupada was going this way, inside Calcutta, chanting. And see the result. Japanese didn't bomb. People don't understand why they didn't bomb. But do we have any doubt why they didn't bomb? Because Prabhupada was chanting, that's why Krishna saved the city of Calcutta. So now we are going to the chapter 16. Let's see. This chapter is Lord's opulence, Krishna's opulence. So this is actually question answer. Like this, you have seen all these interactions are actually question answer. Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna asking questions, Krishna answering. Srimad Bhagavatam, Parikshit Maharaj asking question, Sukadev Goswami answering. Shaunaka Rishi asking questions, Suta Goswami answering. Vidura asking questions, Maitreya Rishi answering. So all these are actually question-answer sessions. Pariprashnena. Asking question, therefore, is very, very important. So, he actually asked how the Lord has no beginning and no end. He is the cause of the birth, maintenance and destruction of all living entities. He is the soul of all beings, and by secretly taking up residence within all living entities' body, he says he sees everything. But the conditioned souls are bewildered by the external energy of the Lord. So in this way, after offering prayers to the lotus feet of Krishna, Uddhava expressed his desire to know about Krishna's various opulences. Then Krishna then described all these opulences. And after that, he commented that all power, beauty, fame, opulence, humility, charity, charm, good fortune, valor, tolerance, and wisdom, whatever is considered to be glorious, is actually due to Krishna's mercy, Krishna's expansion. We develop all these qualities simply by Krishna's mercy. So we know that Krishna has six opulences, but not only that, that Krishna, wherever there is jajjat vibhuti mat shaktam, wherever there is something vibhuti, some opulence, we have to understand that that is mama tejangsha sambhavam. Just as in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna told Arjuna that wherever there is any vibhuti, any opulence, any extraordinary power. It is simply due to a fragmental potency of Krishna. So therefore, one cannot say that these material things possess those qualities. Actually, whenever we see this extraordinary power, we have to see that it is Krishna's manifestation of Krishna's potency. See what a wonderful way to look at or recognize Krishna's potency. Wherever there is anything extraordinary, display of power and potency, glamour and beauty, whatever, it's only manifestation of Krishna's, display of Krishna's potency. Just an insignificant portion of Krishna's potency. Therefore, we cannot consider that there is any opulence in the material nature. There is no opulence in the material nature. All these opulences are actually a display of Krishna's potency. And a pure devotee, advanced devotee, uses his intelligence to see it in that way. So this is again, this is how one can see Krishna everywhere in everything. So let's go back to the main point. Krishna is advising Uddhav. Krishna instructed Uddhav to take sannyas. Uddhav asked, please give me the understanding, how can I actually be a sannyasi? And in response, Krishna is actually pointing out that you have to see me everywhere as a sannyasi. Chaitanya Charitamrita is making that point. Sthabor jangam dekhe na dekhe tar murti, sarvatra sphuray tar ishto deva sphurti. He doesn't see the moving and non-moving objects. He simply sees his worshipable Lord Krishna everywhere. So this is how a sannyasi has to see Krishna everywhere. I'll stop now. And so we can answer a few questions. Yeah, for the last few days and today also we haven't been able to answer questions. A stack is coming. Another stack is coming. Another big one is coming. Okay. So, Mithilapati Das, where is Mithilapati? Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj, please accept my humble obeisances. Kindly enlighten that what happens to Nitya Baddha Jeev when he takes pure name. When one chants pure name, he receives Krishna Prem and goes back to Godhead. Therefore, try to chant pure name. Then, will he attain love of Godhead? Yes. But Krishna Prem, pure name gives Krishna Prem, and Krishna Prem actually elevates him to the spiritual sky. By Subhadra, which Subhadra is this? Ujjain Subhadra. Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj, Dandavat Pranam. Guru Maharaj, you said there is always something to learn from someone. Guru Maharaj, sometimes people correct us in such a way that we feel bad. And due to our false ego, we cannot accept our fault. So Guru Maharaj, how we can stay humble at the time when someone mocked down our ego? Because due to our fallen condition, we are unable to put our ego down and to accept our fault. So how we can stay humble at that time? So either you become humble or Krishna will make you humble. Your guru will come with a danda and make you humble. Alright? So the point is, get rid of your false ego, recognize it's not right, become humble. And I must also admit that sometimes I do that. Sometimes when I notice that somebody is displaying his false ego, then I just ignore him. And that smashes his false ego. He wants, due to his false ego, he wants to become prominent. And when I ignore, he learns a lesson. So, like either you become false ego, free from false ego, or you'll be forced to give up your false ego. Radhikeshwar Das, Hare Krishna Maharaj, Dandavat Pranam. 12th September evening class, okay. In yesterday's class, Guru Maharaj, you have mentioned to get out from material platform and be situated on spiritual platform. My question is, how practically we are able to understand that? Okay, now I am migrating from material platform. Are you listening to the classes? Is it helping you? So, this is the way to get out of material platform. Krishna is instructing us how to get out of the material platform. What lesson did you learn from that? The only way you can get out of the material platform is by surrendering to a devotee of Krishna. Ramaniya Keshav Das, when I call the name, if you're there, please stand up. So it looks like he's not there. Shiv Kumar Krishna Das. Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj, please accept my humble obeisances. In yesterday's class, you mentioned that hearing itself is not sufficient, but to accept what is heard is very important. And to follow that, we need determination. But how do we get determination to follow what we hear? You have to make some effort. Determination don't come by itself. Determination means you resolve, I will do it. Alright? So, the point actually was in the class, or so we have to stop this, even stop this, and direct here. Okay? So that's how you have to do it. You have to make that effort. Long question. Anyway, I'll keep these long questions for later, because Brajendra Krishna also another long question. Ajay Gopal, who is Ajay Gopal? Okay, not here. So no need to answer. Brajendra Krishna, let me see. Thank you very much, Guru Maharaj, for reminding us that whatever we do, kirtan, class, dancing, we should do it in spirit of pleasing Krishna rather than impressing others. But during our school days, college days, company days, we have been doing every activity to impress others. So, strong samskars are there. Now by your mercy, we can see a significant change in ourselves. But many a times, where we are able to direct our attention towards Krishna, but not always. Sometimes we fail, sometimes we pass. Still, there are elements of impressing tendency. How to completely get rid of them? Again, practice. Where is Brajendra Krishna? Practice. Right? If you see that the tendency is cropping up, try to curb it and focus more on Krishna. And or just get absorbed in the chanting of the holy name. There's no need to impress anybody. But at the back of your mind you can think that Krishna is watching you and Krishna is happy that you are doing that. So that will inspire you to think more, put more attention to Krishna. So there is something from your servant, no name, so no answer. Hari Parayan Das? Okay. Respected Guru Maharaj, please accept my humble obeisances unto your lotus feet. I have the following questions, if you can throw some light on them. What is the size of super soul? Is it situated inside the soul, or by the side of the soul, or in the heart? You see, spiritual thing cannot be measured by anything material. You get the point. Spiritual is a totally different dimension. So we cannot, like for example, when it is said, Keshagra Shatobhagasya Shatodha, 1/10,000 part of the tip of the hair. Try to imagine. Dividing the tip of the hair into 100 parts. Right? Now, is there any way we can possibly divide that part into another 100 parts? So we have to understand this inconceivable. Meaning, it is not possible to measure by any material calculation. What is the size of the super soul in the heart? The super soul in the heart is, the size of the super soul is all, everything is within him. But still he is in our heart. You get the point? The super soul is in everyone's heart, is in our heart. The main point is that there is no way we can actually figure out the size of it, because it is not a material thing that you can measure materially. We can use an English saying in that respect. The saying is, what is the square root of a sonnet? You understand the meaning of that expression. What is a square root? Square root is a mathematical consideration. Like square root of 4 is 2. Right? That means you multiply 2 by another 2, it will become 4. Square root of 16 is 4. Multiply 4 by 4 is 16. Right? That is the meaning of square root. Right? And sonnet is a rhyme in poetry. So can you measure the square root of a sonnet? So similarly, it is impossible to measure the spiritual things with material understanding. Sometimes it has been described as the size of a thumb. But here we have to understand that at that time the person perceived it in that way. But that is not the exact size of the super soul. And where the super soul is, as it has been described, in a tree there are two birds. So two birds are maintaining two separate entities, identity. Super soul is there in the tree, in the body of the tree, in the tree of the body. The spirit soul is also in the body of the tree. I mean the tree of the body. Right? They're there, both of them are there. And the situation, they're situated in the heart. The soul is situated in the heart, the super soul also is functioning or situated in the heart. You mentioned that you like to chant at 2 a.m. In that context, how one can overcome sleep? In other words, how one can manage with 2-3 hours of sleep and remain alert and fresh rest of the day? So you are actually asking how I do that, right? How do you get up at 2 o'clock? Okay, I'll give you the secret. Go to bed early. And then what happens, you develop a habit. As a result of that, even if you go to bed late, you'll get up at 2 o'clock. After whether you leave your bed at that time or not, that's up to you. And I must honestly admit, sometimes I don't leave the bed. I keep on lying on bed. So, do the thing the way it is practical, and do it happily. You see, Krishna consciousness should be practiced happily. You know, if I had to force myself to get up at 2 o'clock and chant, it would have been very difficult. But you know, it is happening. Like I get up and I chant. So it, one important thing to consider is whatever you do, don't do it stressfully. Do it in a relaxed way. No hard and fast pressure. Just do it happily. Susukham kartum abhayam. At the practicing stage maybe some pressure is there, but eventually we have to take it easy. How can one train his mind to stay at the present? Don't dream about the future and don't lament about the past. Be here now. And whatever you're doing, focus yourself in doing that. You mentioned that Guru takes all the past karmas of his disciples at the time of initiation. But what happens to future karmas in future lives? What disciple will be responsible for? So, the disciple should act in such a way that there shouldn't be any future karma. Right? Act simply to please Krishna. And that is how at least you will be free, relieve your guru from unnecessary burden of your sinful activities. And sometimes, yes, guru has to come back. But anyway, we don't need to worry about that. Whatever Krishna wants. If Krishna wants to come again and again, we are prepared to do that. Okay. Thank you all very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Gaur Premanande Hari Hari. Yesterday I made an announcement that Shiva will sing this evening, but I got a message that he is not feeling well, right? And so he won't be singing. Tia, would you like to sing this evening again? Huh? You'll sing tomorrow also. Or will you sing tomorrow? Okay, sing tomorrow. So today, Maharaj will lead the kirtan. Thank you, Hare Krishna. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. And I hope, Maharaj, you'll excuse me that I will not take part in the kirtan tonight. Hare Krishna.